Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNradio.com/behindthebadge.
And may the 5th be with you.
And may the 5th be with you.
Yesterday was Star Wars Day.
It was May the 4th be with you.
May the 4th be with you. Get it?
Oh, I got it.
And today, I'm encouraging people to share a fifth of
share
whatever.
Share the fifth?
Whatever your favorite
preference.
I knew
that was going to happen.
Yeah. Happy Cinco de Mayo, by the way.
That's more
that
more
is May the 5th.
Yes,
that
right.
Is May the 5th.
Cinco de Mayo.
Do you know what Cinco de Mayo is?
It's the 5th of May.
No, but I mean the
It's a celebration of liberation, I believe, from the Spanish government?
Somebody. That's a celebration of somebody over somebody else.
Over there.
Over there. Over by there. It commemorates the Mexican victory over the French.
The French?
At the Battle of Puebla, May 5th, 1862.
The French? Ah.
It was the French. I'm not reading this, by the way. It's
no,
the French.
No,
it's the French under Napoleon, who sent their troops into Mexico.
Wait a minute.
Is
1862?
Yeah.
Napoleon was dead by then. This would have been 1762, perhaps.
Not according to Google.
Oh, okay.
Which is never wrong.
Never wrong. Never wrong.
Well, this says... I'm looking at several different sources here.
Okay.
On
the Google?
All right.
On the internet
We'll go with
machine.
You. This is your show. So
I'm telling you what, you want to question history.com?
No.
You want to question, what is this, the El Paso Times?
No.
I'm just telling you.
Okay.
Get off my back. Show just started.
Oh, welcome back, by the way.
Oh, I need a margarita to start off the show here today.
9/11, Dean Richards, Sunday morning, Eastern Orthodox. Sunday morning. Little thing we call a Greek Easter in our family. But those of the Eastern Orthodox faith are celebrating their Easter today. They're our Easter today. We got a little ripped off this year, Schwani, because...
Why? Because the candy was...
Regular Easter was so...
Early.
The dates were
the
so
dates
different
were
this year.
Really a mess, messed up, yeah,
yeah,
in terms
usually,
of time. The time
just element. A week or so, one way or the other. But it was like almost a full month this time.
Right.
And all the Easter candy is pretty
well gone.
Pretty rotten by now.
I think, did you try maybe some early Halloween candy that might be
coming? Oh, that's not a bad... I didn't think of that. Get some little bite-sized Snickers and glue them into a little bunny.
There you go.
Now, that was that hymn that you just heard is what was sung at midnight last night at churches all over the world, really. Midnight, you know, their own local time. Christos Anesti is the greeting. That's what you should have said to me when I came into the newsroom this morning to say hello to you.
Well, I did say good morning.
Yeah, but you didn't say Christos Anesti.
No, I didn't.
And the response would have been Alithos Anesti.
Thank you.
So, there you go.
Lesson learned.
Yeah. This is a very cultural show.
Indeed.
This is not just fun and games.
That's why we've won Peabody Awards.
Mr. Peabody Awards.
Yes, right.
Just to be clear.
With Sherman.
Mr. Peabody
is the presenter.
And Sherman. Just to avoid it.
And how many people know Mr. Peabody and Sherman
Uncle
these
Dean,
days?
What's Mr. Peabody? It's a shame, you know what? If kids don't know Fractured Fairy Tales, Mr. Peabody, that whole line of...
Bullwinkle Moose.
Bullwinkle J. Moose.
With the Rocket J. Squirrel.
Rocket the Flying Squirrel. Boris Badenoff.
And Natasha.
Natasha Fatal.
Yep.
God, I love that show.
That was great.
That was my favorite cartoon.
Was it?
Yeah.
More so than
Bugs Bunny.
Bugs Bunny or Yogi Bear.
I liked all the rest of them, but Rocky and Bullwinkle?
They were fun.
Oh, that was a funny show.
And they would, it was an episode. It was a series. You know, they had, you know, they were always in conflict right. with Boris and Natasha chasing them. And, you know, there were three or four segments to the story.
6 foot metal munching moon mice. Wow. There's a little insight into what's going on in the brain of Dean Richards.
In the course of less than 5 minutes, we have gone from Orthodox Easter to Rocky and Bullwinkle.
Don't forget about Cinco de Mayo.
And Cinco de Mayo.
Cinco de Mayo, which, oh, I think.
This is why this is an award-winning show.
Yeah. So here's, I think we haven't figured out what the deal was with all this. Cinco de Mayo is indeed, as I had mentioned, now the computer's not working. Great. It's what I said it was.
Yeah, I was confused, though, when you said Napoleon, and Andy was looking at it, and actually he did correct me. It's Napoleon III.
The third.
Right. That was involved with this.
Not Napoleon I.
Right. Yeah. Not Napoleon I.
It's Napoleon I.
It's Napoleon I.
It all ties in.
Seamlessly.
Oh, I did not know that Napoleon III was interested in Mexico.
Well, they had various. The French were all through this part of the country, you know, for years.
Sure.
And then they moved down into, you know, that area, all looking for gold, really. And then, you know, as the information says here, you know, Benito Juarez was.
Wait a minute,
the president.
You're not. This isn't right off the top.
No. I'm not. I'm not an expert on this. So yeah, I'm looking at what's in front of me here.
Come on,
to be
Johnny,
honest,
just say you are.
So
nobody believes any of us know anything.
But that's what it was. It was defeating the French forces at Puebla.
Yeah.
Hence the term Cinco de Mayo,
the
5th of May.
It was the 5th of May, a day I'll never remember. Yes, I will.
Just like the night Chicago died, right?
I'm warning you right now, I'm in a singing mood today. I
can tell this.
I don't know why, but I am. So we've got the Cinco de Mayo going on. We've got the Greek Easter going on. We've got a lot of good guests on the show today. A two-time Oscar nominee, Michael Shannon, is going to be joining us later on. Dr. Jeremy Silver is going to join us with our Week in Health segment in a few minutes. We've got Donnie Wahlberg, who's going to join us today. Are you familiar with Donnie Wahlberg, Shwani?
Yes, I am. I'm trying to place why, though. I'm having a senior moment.
Andy, help him, please.
He owns Wahlburgers.
He is one of the owners of Wahlburgers.
Yeah, and a singer, as former singer, way back.
Singer. That's what I thought.
Actually, he's still a current singer.
Ah, okay.
He and the group to which he belongs, a little group called the New Kids on the Block.
See, I knew that.
The right stuff.
The right stuff.
Man, you are in a singing mood today. We are in trouble. Oh, wow.
Look what a week away from us did to him.
I know. Andy, we're going to have to come up with some sort of a duet here or something like that.
Yeah, that's
Figure out his favorite song.
It's okay. People on the text line are already asking me to stop.
I'm sure.
Should have given me the text line number.
Fortunately, Shwani, I recognize your phone number on here. So, yeah, so we've got Donnie Wahlberg, because the New Kids have a new album out. These guys, I mean, they broke up for a little while, and then they got back together again. They're as popular as ever, doing shows all over the world, really. And they're bringing a show out to Tinley Park this coming summer. They've got a new album out at Wahlburgers Restaurants. Donnie Wahlberg lives in St. Charles with his wife, Jenny McCarthy. No, really, Dean.
This is
tell
true.
Tell us more. So, you know, we've gotten kind of friendly with them. And Had a nice little chat with them. We'll share that coming up with you later on. Oh, here's what you're going to love. 24 years ago this month, I didn't start doing the radio show, but we began the show. We had a full show booked. And then within about 10 minutes, every single guest on the show canceled.
Is today the anniversary of this?
I don't know the exact date, but I do know that it was May of the year 2000 that Drew Carey happened to be listening to the show.
That's so funny.
It's such a weird. I'll explain the full thing, but Drew Carey was listening to the show. He heard that every single guest had canceled and called up to be a guest on the show to help me out. And I left him on hold for about a half an hour.
Because you didn't believe it was him.
I didn't believe it was him. Because listeners were calling up going, yeah, I'm Rocky Balboa. I want to be on the show. Yeah, this is James Cagney. See, I know I've been dead for 30 years, but I want to come on your show today. See? Yeah. That's Edward G. Robinson. But people were calling up doing celebrity impersonations. So my producer at the time, Scott, in my ear, says, Drew Carey is on line 6.
And you said, no way.
In my mind, I'm like, well, you know, I've never heard anyone do a Drew Carey impersonation before. So we got to him eventually. I left him on hold forever.
And he stayed. I mean, he didn't call back.
He stayed on the line. He stayed on the line. He gave me grief when he got on the air. It's like, it's about time you got to me.
Yeah, I know.
But this is, I don't know the exact date. I couldn't find the exact date anywhere. But I do know that it was 24 years ago this month. This is our first show of the month of May. So we're going to replay the Drew Carey conversation today.
Nice. Yeah.
That should be fun.
Definitely worth archiving.
Yeah, and our fantastic filing system that we have.
You don't know the date of the show.
Barely remember anything that's going on. Yeah, we don't exactly have the best filing system on the show. We're very, very busy, you know, doing other things.
Yes, like trying to sing songs that we don't know the words to.
The right stuff.
Oh, my.
So, anywho. So we've got a good show planned for you here today, and you've got a good far-flung forecast, I'm hoping.
Yes, it's rather timely, as a matter of fact.
Oh, really?
Dealing with entertainment.
Really? What could it be?
Dealing with entertainment.
And it also deals with an anniversary.
Okay. Well, we'll find out in a minute.
Okay.
Can hardly wait.
I could tell.
Last night, I was honored to moderate a show that took place at the Chicago Theater. You know Phil Rosenthal, who was he's the guy that created Everybody Loves Raymond. He was the executive producer of the show. And then when that show went off the air, he went on to develop culinary and travel shows, first on PBS, and now with his current show, which has just begun its 7th season, Somebody Feed Phil. The show is hilarious. He's so funny, but he takes us to interesting places all over the world trying foods. And they did a night with Phil Rosenthal at the Chicago Theater last night. Sold out, by the way, packed. And I've known Phil for quite a long time. They invited me to come and be the moderator of it, you know, and to, like, ask questions and, you know, sort of interview Phil on stage. And we had the best time. We had so much fun last night. I brought him some food to eat.
Really?
Something I've yet to do for Shawnee. But
that's right. You know, never, yeah, ever have ever. You brought me food.
Nope.
Never.
Not once. Not one.
That's all right.
But here's what I brought him, because last night for the Eastern Orthodox, shout out to Ukrainian Orthodox also. We've got a couple of people on our text line saying that they're Ukrainian. It's their Easter as well. So happy Easter to you as well. But, Holy Saturday, as it's called, it's a pretty big deal. So where am I on the holiest day of the year? At the Chicago Theater. Hosting a show.
Passing out stale candy.
I'm hosting a show with my friend Phil Rosenthal. So I brought him, I went to Greek Islands restaurant, and I picked up this soup, which is it's the traditional soup that Greeks eat right at midnight. Theoretically, for the last 40 days, Greeks should have been going fasting, not eating meat for the last 40 days. So this morning at midnight, you break the fast by eating the soup, which is it's kind of an egg lemon soup. It's not the traditional egg lemon soup that every Greek restaurant has, but it's egg lemon, it's dill, it's onions, and lamb pieces.
So there's meat in it.
Lamb pieces and parts.
Okay.
And parts.
Now here are the parts. The intestines, the heart, the liver. It's like all the innards are chopped up really fine and mixed into the soup. It's delicious. The soup is actually delicious. You just never tell anybody what's in it ahead of time.
Right.
Which is what I did with Phil on stage. I brought him. I went and got some from Greek
Island.
Then
you told him after he had some.
Well, he didn't want to know. I told him it was...
He had an idea.
I told him it was lamb parts in it. I said, do you want to know the parts? And he goes, no, I think it's better if I don't. So, but it's delicious. That's the main thing. He sat there with I put it in a little thermos for him so it would stay warm. And he sat there. He ate the soup. It's called the Margarita soup. And it's we had some fun. We had terrific questions. We had a really, really nice time last night. Phil's a great guy. And his show, if you want to watch his show, check it out, is called Somebody Feed Phil. It's on Netflix. It's in season 7 now. And he has gone to some of the most incredible places to show us the food and cuisine and sites of places all over the world. That's the kind of scam I need to get into, Shwani.
That sounds good to me.
Yeah. We take the show.
I would ask you to count me in, but you never invite me to anything.
Well, no, I think we should. How fun would that be, though?
It would be great.
If we did the show in some remote locations, and I
we've thought of several.
And I make you eat intestines.
You made me eat bugs at tree time once, so.
Would you eat it? Would you, if I told you this is soup and it's got intestines and hearts and liver and all that stuff, would you? Well, I know there's no point in even asking Andy.
Yeah, that's why
question.
I checked out.
Yeah,
here.
You know,
Andy went home about a half an hour ago.
I've had tripe soup.
Yeah.
Where you have those
stomach,
types
isn't it?
Of. Yes. Yeah. And so, yeah, I guess. I do like the regular egg lemon soup,
it's,
though.
It has that. As the base.
Yeah.
And then intestines.
I'll take mine without the intestines.
Hold the intestines, please. All right. Well, interesting. But great time was had, and so many WGN viewers and listeners there last night to say hi. Really appreciate it. Let's get to the far-flung forecast next. Señor Dave El Shuano.
Muchas gracias, amigo.
It's my Cinco de Mayo.
Buenos dias.
Tribute.
Yeah. Buenos dias, and thank you very much. And get out your compasses and protractors and newfangled devices. We're headed to New England today. Mm. We're going to Williamstown, Massachusetts. Williamstown, Massachusetts is in the far, far northwest corner of the state. Its motto is the Village Beautiful, and it certainly is a beautiful part of the country. Mm. Population around 7,500. It was originally called West Hoosac.
Really?
Yes. Mm. It was first settled in 1749, as are many, many villages and towns coming from that 18th century origination up there. But we mention Williamstown today because it is the hometown of the late Matthew Perry, who played Chandler on Friends. And the reason we bring this up is that it was 20 years ago tomorrow that the final episode of Friends aired on NBC. 2004 on May 6th, 51.1 million people tuned in for the final episode of the long-running comedy of Friends. And, of course, in the finale, the relationship between...
Spoiler alert. Are you going to say how it ends?
Well, it was 20 years ago.
I haven't gotten around to watching it yet.
Oh, all right. Well, never mind then.
No, God.
They just remain friends. We'll just put it that way.
Go ahead. Go ahead and spoil it for everyone.
Ross, who was played by David Schwimmer, and Rachel, of course, Jennifer Aniston, had a very interesting relationship and finally got back together at the finale. And
she was supposed to go to Paris, remember?
Right. Yeah. She was on the plane.
Did she get off the plane? Did she get off the plane?
I got off the plane.
And as we mentioned, Matthew Perry, who played Chandler, and Monica, who was Courtney Cox, they were then parents, and Phoebe, Lisa Kudrow was married, Joey was headed off to
Not to Joey.
Was headed off to L.A.
She married Paul Rudd's character.
And married Paul Rudd's character.
That would be Mike.
But the
Joey went to L.A.?
Of course, according to this, he said Joey was headed off to L.A. to pursue his acting career. Hmm. And then there was a spinoff sitcom called Joey.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah, that's right. But, you know, it was amazing to me that it's been 20 years already since the show went off the air because it's still so popular.
Yeah, I think true. Matthew Perry had the last word, too.
Did he?
He said, where?
Was that what it was?
Let's go get some coffee.
And he said, where?
Well, Williamstown, Massachusetts is the hometown of Matthew Perry. Has light rain this morning. It's 49 degrees.
I'll be there for you.
Oh, he's going to sing all morning.
Dean Richards, Sunday morning on WGN, and time for the week in health. Joining us, as always, Dr. Jeremy Silver, who comes to us from the Northwestern Kishwaukee Hospital, where he is Medical Director of Emergency Medicine. Dr. Silver, how are you there, my friend?
Dean, good to be back. Thanks for having me.
I'm waiting to see how soon it's going to be until our phone line drops.
Until you hang up on me, Dean?
I guarantee it's not us doing it. For some reason, there's a glitch. For some reason, it always happens during this segment. So we're going to keep our fingers crossed. They tell us that they fixed it, so we'll see what happens. We have had some incredible weather, some really nice, beautiful, sunshiny weather, although a little overcast right at the moment. But people are outside like crazy right now. It's probably not a bad time just to remind everybody about precautions they should take if they're going to be out in the sun, right?
Well, yeah, I think it's important, and it's one of these things that, it's not a clear and present danger. People aren't thinking when the sun is shining and they're heading to the beach, I better protect myself against skin cancer. But that is, excuse me, that's the reality that exposure to sun and certainly the frequency and intensity of the burn is linked to the risk of cancer. But there's an easy way to protect yourself, and that is to utilize sunscreen.
And, there are so many choices when you go to the store. How do you know what to pick?
Well, certainly higher is better in terms of the SPF, and that's just the rating in terms of the protective amount, the amount of protective material in the sunscreen liquid. But what the dermatologists say is if you're going for an hour or two, 30 is fine. If you're going to be outdoors all day, go for 65 or higher.
Is it necessary to reapply after a certain time? You're outside, you're working out in the garden or whatever, you're in a pool somewhere, something is the protection must be coming off or, sweating off, right?
Correct. So the recommendation is to reapply every 2 hours, either with exercise or excess perspiration, which I guess, what is excess perspiration? Your sweaty may be different than my sweaty,
right.
But certainly every couple hours is reasonable.
And they say that the areas that that there are certain areas of the body that get neglected, even if you are a sunscreen user, What are the areas? I mean, you thoroughly saturate yourself everywhere possible, right?
Yeah, I think just basically you want to apply it naked if you can. And if you think about, you know, when you take your kids and you just grab them and slather it on, you're really applying it everywhere. But don't forget the ears, the back of the neck, the nose, and certainly the forehead and chin, you know, so all the parts of the face. People often forget their hands and their feet. And that's very important. I think I mentioned last time, I don't know if it was recorded or not, but Bob Marley, the reggae artist, died of melanoma, and it was on the base of his toe.
Oh, really?
So, yes. Yeah, so that's kind of the apocryphal tale that they teach in medical school, and just always try and remind people, just use as much sunscreen as you can. And by the way, it doesn't matter how dark or light your skin is. Everyone can get cancer,
yeah.
Whether you're heavily pigmented or not.
So, I mean, I've always heard that, you know, people who are fair-skinned are more prone to sunburn, skin cancer than people who are of a darker complexion. That's not true.
Well, I think it's certainly easy to burn when you're pale, but that's not to say that you can't burn if you're dark.
Okay, so everybody still needs to take precautions regardless then.
You got it.
All right, very good. Let's move on. This is, I am told, Lung Cancer Awareness Month. Is that, you know, something that only people who smoke should be aware of? Is this something that we all should be aware of? What does that mean exactly? American Lung Association's Lung Cancer Action Week.
Well, so lung cancer is obviously it's a cancer of the lung, and it can involve many different parts of the lung, either the sac around the lung or the tubes that carry the air into the lungs, or the little sacs where air exchange occurs, where the oxygen goes into the blood and the carbon dioxide comes out of the blood and you breathe it out. So anywhere in that sponge network, you can develop a cancer. Now, there's different types of cancer. There's small cell lung cancer and non-small cell lung cancer. Really, the types don't matter. The point is that, you know, we're all vulnerable. Certainly, those who smoke are significantly more at risk, but there's still people at risk who don't smoke. And it's tough to pick those people out of a crowd. So that's why it's certainly important to be visiting your primary care doctor on a regular basis.
So are there things that people should do to ensure safety of their lungs as much as possible? I have to think that the air that we breathe is loaded with toxins anyway. I don't know if we can actually do anything about that, but that probably is the case. Smoking, obviously, is going to be a factor in this.
Smoking's the big one. You know, smoking is a significant risk factor for cancer. In fact, smoking is responsible for about 90% of lung cancer deaths in the U.S. So, you know, quitting smoking, you may think, well, I've smoked for 20 years, you know, the horse is out of the barn. Not so much. You can still reduce your risk. And, of course, reduce the risk of heart attack, lower your blood pressure, reduce the risk of blood clots, et cetera, et cetera. So there's plenty of value to quitting smoking, even if you've been smoking for a long time. And then, of course, the lung cancer pieces, you can't emphasize it enough.
Now, I quit smoking in 1988. I don't know if they still do this, but they then had something called the Great American Smokeout, where I think it was the American Lung Association or maybe the American Cancer Society encouraged people to stop smoking for just one day. And I did, and one day turned to 2 days, and now, however many years later, I still am, you know, have not even had a puff of a cigarette in that time. I'm too afraid I'll start again. It, you know, unfortunately, it's very pleasurable. And so I've just completely avoided it. Are my lungs still affected as a result of my smoking however many years ago? How many years ago was that? 30, 40 years, 35 years, something like that?
Part of it depends on how long you smoked when you did smoke.
Yeah, I was one of those dumb kids, though, you know, like little kids, teenagers maybe.
Yeah.
You know, hey, this is going to make me look cool. I'll steal some cigarettes and smoke cigarettes. Now, look, don't I look so cool?
Well, Dean, it's all kind of individual, but generally speaking, if you smoke for maybe, say, a couple of years and then quit, you definitely have increased your risk. And there may have been damage that could lead to something we call COPD or chronic obstructive pulmonary disease, and that can affect people down the line. And that just varies from person to person. Some people will get it after smoking for a little bit. Some people won't get it for a long time and then smoke for a while. So that's just individually dependent. But I can tell you that after 10 to 15 years after you quit, your risk of lung cancer drops by half.
Okay, well, that's good to know. That's encouraging. That's encouraging.
You've done yourself some favors, sir.
Well, I guess so. Isn't it interesting, though, that after all these years that I still crave nicotine? That every once in a while it's like, oh, boy, one would sure taste good right now. That's how much of a stranglehold this drug, these cigarettes, the drug has on you, I guess, right?
Well, it manipulates the brain chemistry. And so that seed was planted inside the brain a long time ago, and you're right, it never really goes away.
Yeah. Well, be aware, you know, those of you that can, I hope you quit for your own good. And if you're, you know, you're just one of those people that can't or won't, believe me, I understand how difficult the whole thing is. If you have questions or thoughts, comments for Dr. Silver, 312-981-7200 is our phone number. We'll get to both your calls and your texts in just a moment. 312-981-7200 next. Sunday morning, Dean Richards with Dr. Jeremy Silver. Answering your health questions, 312-981-7200. You can call in. You can text in if you'd like. 312-981-7200. Here's an interesting question related to what we're talking about. Can sun damage early in life show up later in life?
Yes. The short answer is yes. There is a long lead time in some cases, and I don't know what the maximum lead time is, 20, 30 years, but I do know that you can definitely develop some pigmentation early in life that over time can become concerning. And so if you have any kind of moles or liver spots, as they're called, or freckles that are changing, or anything that suddenly appears that wasn't there before, particularly that's dark or has irregular borders or just looks concerning. Your mother says, hey, you should get that looked at. Your friend says, oh, I didn't notice that. Go get it looked at.
I have on one of my hands, I have those, I guess you're calling liver spots. I've heard them call age spots. Same thing, right?
Sure. Yep.
But my dermatologist said, sorry to tell you, pal, that's sun damage that you have. But my dad had them like crazy. And I thought, oh, great. Thanks for passing those on. But apparently it's all my years of not protecting myself properly, being out in the sun, I guess, right?
That's correct.
Well, somebody pay attention to what doctors and all the experts are telling us. 630 area code asks, does vaping affect your lungs as bad as nicotine?
Vaping, I think the jury is still out. I think there's certainly evidence that the chemicals in the vape liquid are not helpful and may be harmful. We know that, that there's substances that quote unquote are cancer-causing. But I think by and large, would we rather that you vape than smoke cigarettes? I think the answer is yes. So, one harm is certainly less than the other, but that doesn't mean that it's zero harm, if that makes sense.
Yeah. 630 area code says a friend has been diagnosed with the flu type B. Was this covered with only the one flu shot that we got in the fall? What's the difference between flu type A and flu type B?
So there's I guess the biggest difference is that flu B doesn't affect animals. But in terms of kids and adults, the flu B sometimes causes milder illness. Flu B tends to be more prevalent in kids than adults. The vaccine should provide some protection against both. But again, it's not, nothing's perfect. And so most people with flu B, however, do just fine. And it's tends to be less worrisome when I see people with that infection.
Yeah. Are we out of flu season right now or not really?
I think we're out of the surge. But certainly there's still flu circulating. And I think we're in an environment now where, you know, we're going to see flu almost all year round, where it'll attenuate for periods of time, but it won't totally go away completely. But we're definitely out of the high respiratory season, that's for sure.
And only because we don't have enough things to worry about already. We're hearing these stories all the time about bird flu. Is that something that the general population should be concerned with?
Well, you know, I think I'm not lying awake, you know, worrying about it at night. But I think in the back of my mind, you know, you always are concerned when you have animal viruses that then can hop between species and then potentially infect humans you know, potentially drive another pandemic. That's kind of the background worry. But I think there's already a vaccine for bird flu available. And so if it did become an issue, we'd kind of be primed for that, I think, as a public health network. So I wouldn't be freaked out about it. But, you know, I think it wouldn't be surprising to me if one day we started seeing bird flu in people.
How do people get bird flu?
Well, it typically will hop from one species to another. So I know that it was found in cattle, for instance.
Oh boy.
And so then you have a mutation in a cow, and somebody who's milking the cow or working with the cattle is around the cow, is exposed to the virus. They become, you know, a carrier of the virus, and then it kind of goes from there.
So that's
the thought of how it might start.
What about the cattle has the bird flu? I eat a steak, and I get bird flu. Is that a scenario or not really?
I think by the time the steak is cooked, the flu is killed. Now, there are certain viruses called prion diseases. We think of something like mad cow disease. Now, those can be passed in the meat of an animal, but they're extremely rare. And the U.S. Department of Agriculture is screening for those types of illnesses constantly. But I'd actually be thinking more of the virus kind of passing into a milk product. Mm. But again, most of these products are pasteurized or heated at a high. Yeah. So, you know, I think more likely it's somebody working alongside the animal that then comes out in the community and passes it, as opposed to coming through the food chain.
Got it. Let's see if we can get a quick call in here from Mike. You're on with Dr. Jeremy Silver. Hi.
Hello. Hello, doctor. I got a quick question for you. I have been diagnosed with AFib for over 10 years, and I've had two ablations to hopefully cure the symptoms. But I recently had AFib, another AFib episode, and I know that with AFib you're at a high risk of stroke. My wife has been waking up numerous times over the past couple of months with numbness in my legs, numbness to my face, slurring of words. By the time I get to the ER, they do a CT, they do the MRI, they cannot find any evidence of stroke. The neurologist is saying that I may have nerve damage in my neck. Can those symptoms mimic stroke?
Well, Mike, thanks for calling, and I'm sorry to hear about the clinical course you've had. It sounds rough. To answer your question, yes, nerve damage can definitely mimic stroke. By the same token, you've got this well-described disease that's definitely a risk factor. Do you have a cardiologist that's following you along and is kind of thinking about next steps for you?
Yeah, let's hope that he does. He's not on the line anymore. Okay. He's probably listening to the question, but sure. It sounds like he needs to, what you were leading to, and you need to follow up with cardiologists.
Yes.
With something of that nature. We are flat out of time here, so I'm going to say thank you, Dr. Jeremy Silver, Medical Director, Emergency Medicine, Northwestern Medicine, Kishwaukee Hospital. A great segment, doctor, but even more important than that, not a single dropout on our phone line.
I guess, Dean, we could tell the phone doctor he doesn't need to make a house call.
That's exactly right. Have a great Sunday, doctor. Thank you.
And you.
You ever Google your own name?
Oh, yeah, I've done it.
I made the mistake of doing that once or twice.
What have you found?
Critiques here and there, false information here and there.
Schwani?
I found nothing.
Oh, that's sad.
I found nothing.
You want me to write a trashy review so you have something like the rest of us do?
It came up. No such name has
no
been
found. No such number.
Who are you talking about?
No such phone.
Oh, man.
Return to sender.
Here we go with the songs
I'm
again.
In a singy mood today.
Sing along with Dean.
Andy, we need to pick a song, I'm telling you, before the morning is over.
I have, as Andy says, I think this goes along with me being a critic. I can pretty much guarantee that by Sunday, about half the responses that are on social media think I'm a genius for my review, and about half think I'm the biggest moron in the world.
Yeah.
That just goes with, you give an opinion, somebody else gives an opinion, but on social media, you can't have a pleasant disagreement of views. Everything has to be mean and nasty like that.
Mm-hmm.
But here's what I found that I'm enjoying. Other people who are named Dean Richards.
Oh, yeah.
Do you have any of those?
Well, I have a guy with the same name who lives in Wisconsin, who is kind enough, when he gets emailed, knowing it's for me, forwards it to me.
Oh, well, that's nice.
Yeah. I mean, this is a good guy. I mean, you're named Andy Mazur, you got to be a good guy, right? So, no, he helps out a lot. He's up in Eau Claire, Wisconsin, I believe.
Oh, very nice.
Yeah, nice guy.
I have, there's a Dean Richards who is a radio personality in Hartford, Connecticut, I guess, right?
Hartford, Connecticut, yeah.
WRCH, man.
Hey.
And Dean Richards does a show called Pillow Talk.
Oh.
Nice.
Weeknight, 7 to 10.
Oh, that's
for
you.
7 to midnight.
That's just for you.
Yeah, Dean Richards on the Pillow Talk show. WRCH-FM, Hartford.
Hey, now.
Want to hear a little of Dean Richards?
Yeah.
Apparently, this Pillow Talk is less talk. More music, less talk.
Segue after segue.
Oh. Dean really phoned it in that night.
Wasn't there a song called Pillow Talk?
Yeah, by Sylvia.
Sylvia, yes.
Or as I used to comically call her when I was a DJ, Saliva.
Saliva.
Come on, Dean.
Some good tunes.
We gonna walk it out.
Wow. I don't know what they're paying Dean, but
he's making a lot just doing nothing.
He's just segueing songs.
Spending a lot of time on the Pillow Talk line, taking your requests.
Maybe he was taking a nap.
Very possible. He may have fallen asleep. Who would have thought? On Dean Richards' Sunday Morning Pillow Talk. It'd be bad if we called this show Pillow Talk from now on.
We're supposed to be a morning program.
We sleep through most of the shows. So. Coming up later on.
And all the advertisers are for bedding and the mattress store that's now at 435 North Michigan.
I've been pushing that mattress store for how many years now?
Talk about a place where we can do the show.
Right, exactly. I've always wanted to do the show horizontally. Coming up later on in the show, this show, Sunday Morning Pillow Talk, Donnie Wahlberg from New Kids on the Block, St. Charles' very own. It's got a whole bunch of stuff to talk to us about. The new album, a new tour, living out in St. Charles with his wife, Jenny McCarthy. We've got lots of good stuff still to come for you today. Talk to me a little bit about Bob Avellini. Andy passed away of after dealing with cancer. But he was he was like sort of Walter Payton's quarterback, wasn't he?
He was. They were drafted in the same draft in 1975. And I believe that Avellini started the last few games of his of the season of 1976. And then he led them to the playoffs in 1977. It was a very short-lived birth there. They got smoked by the Dallas Cowboys. But yeah, he was the guy that was charged with handing the ball off to Walter Payton as many times as he could in a single game. He never really threw for many yards, but he was always one of those likable guys. It's funny because I used to play pickup basketball when I was in high school and junior high school at this place in Glenview. And every once in a while, he'd be there. He would be there because really? I don't know if he had a nephew or a son or somebody that was playing in the same league, but every once in a while he would be there. And
we're just hanging out like the parents.
Yeah, and he was just always a good guy to talk to. He was funny. He never shied away from letting everybody know that it was him. If you asked him, obviously, yeah. He wasn't going to wear his jersey or anything like that. But he was pretty much known in tandem there with Walter Payton. They were drafted in 1975. Payton, of course, in the first round. Avellini a little bit later. But it's kind of a cool story just how he kind of rose through the ranks there. There was obviously some issues with the quarterbacking even back in that day. Gary Huff and Mike Phipps and guys of that name that he would take over for. And then he eventually gave way to Vince Evans and then kind of moved on from there.
How far after that did McMahon come?
McMahon was in 82.
Was he like maybe two or three quarterbacks after
Avellini? Yeah, he was drafted in 82, so I want to say he was probably two after, maybe three after Avellini.
Yeah. We tend to think of these guys like before the 85 Bears, after the 85 Bears.
It's true. I mean, and it's interesting to point out, too. I mean, there have been probably as many quarterback changes pre-Super Bowl as there have been post since Jim McMahon, and there's been a multitude of names that you'd have to really dig if you weren't a huge Bears fan to even know the Peter Tom Willises, the Rusty Lishes, Will Fuhrers.
Yeah.
I mean, there's some guys that maybe played one or two games for the Bears and then were done, and then they got their next best guy, and then they drafted their next best guy, and he never worked out. So let's hope that this one works out with Caleb Williams.
Yeah, I just can't even imagine the kind of pressure that he has on his back already.
Yeah.
He hasn't even stepped out onto the field yet.
Yeah, it looked like he was having a good time yesterday. He was at the Cubs game with a couple of his new teammates.
He does seem to me, some guys thrive on this kind of pressure and expectation. And I hope that he certainly does. But, I mean, before he was even drafted, the world was on his shoulders for the future of the franchise. So I sure hope that it does work out. And very sad about
sad to hear about Bob Avellini.
Bob Avellini, only 70 years old, fighting cancer, succumbing to the disease. So our condolences to his family on that. So everyone is shocked that it's been 24 years since our famous Drew Carey call took place. I'm actually a little shocked myself. Somebody had said that they thought it was the anniversary. I looked it up. I could only, despite the fact, Shawnee, as you know, we keep meticulous records on the show of every single thing that we say and do on the show.
You have a very thorough archival list.
Yeah,
a big filing cabinet down the hall.
We use the Dewey Decimal System.
The Dewey Decimal System.
A lot of places don't do that anymore.
It's also called random.
It's also called scraps of paper on my desk.
Post-it notes.
I left it here somewhere.
Yeah, it's not too far off, actually. That's actually fairly accurate.
Now, where did I put that?
So somebody said that they thought that it was right around now that this happened, and I looked it up. And the best that I could find was that the famous Drew Carey call took place in May of the year 2000. That seems right to me when I go back and think about what else was going on then, who else was working here, who our bosses were, et cetera. That seems about right to me. So you know, what happened was we were, you know, starting the show. I'm back in the office, you know, before the show starts, getting things ready. Again, meticulously preparing for the show, as I always as I do every Sunday morning. And the phone rings. And it was a representative for John Mahoney, you know, from Fred, the TV show Frasier, who played Martin Crane on the show. He was supposed to be on. He was in a play. And sorry, he's not feeling well. He can't come on the show. Okay, you know, fine, no problem. Hope he feels better. Hang up the phone. A few minutes later, the phone rings again. And did so like three or four other times. Mm. Every single guest on the show that we had booked that day canceled. Everybody. And now we're starting from scratch. We have no guests on the show, which on a show like this is, you know, not the end of the world, because we do have the phones. You know, we you know, goof around enough on the show. So I said, don't worry about it. We'll you know, make something out of this either way. I go on the air and I talk about how all of the guests on the show that day had canceled. You know, I make I know, Shawnee, you'll find this hard to believe. I made a big deal over the fact that everyone had canceled. What are we going to do? prone to exaggeration sometimes, yes.
You know, you never knew this all these years, but I was actually behind this.
You were the one that the other guests had not really canceled?
I was actually the instigator.
You were the one making those calls canceling? Wow. I would have never known that. I did not know that. So, you know, I go on the air saying, well, you know, if we have any celebrity impersonators, come on the show and I'll interview you. And of course, the phones blew up with, you know, knuckleheads calling up, doing impersonations of celebrities. But in my ear, my producer at the time, Scott Cameron, gets in my ear and says, Drew Carey is online. A guy who says he's Drew Carey is on line six. And I said, well, Drew Carey's not. How could Drew Carey possibly be hearing our show? He's in California. We're in Chicago. How could he be hearing the show? I said, all right, we'll get to him. I just thought it was somebody goofing around. So we go to commercials. We continue to take fake calls. Probably about 20 minutes went by, and I left this call on hold. And it turns out that it really was Drew Carey. I'm going to play that conversation for you when we come right back. Coming up, we're going to remember the great Phil Donahue. He was honored with a Congressional Medal of Honor in Washington, D.C. by the president yesterday. We'll play back a little of the ceremony itself in one of our last conversations. I shouldn't make it sound so final. One of our last conversations that we had with Phil on this show. But for now, we go back to May of 2000, the morning of the now famous Drew Carey call to save me. When we were, you know, all of our guests had canceled, and Drew Carey called to bail us out. And that would be this conversation. Here we go. Is Drew,
it says,
on line one?
Hi, Dean. It's Drew Carey.
Get out of here.
I swear to God, I can't believe they kept me on hold for so long and you're looking for a guest. I'm in Disney World.
This is really Drew Carey.
Yeah, it's really Drew Carey.
Get out of here.
I'm in Disney World.
Why I kept you on hold so long? Because I thought you were somebody goofing on us.
No, I'm at Disney World and I'm watching it on, I'm watching your show on TV. I guess you're owned by Disney.
Well, no, actually we're not owned by Disney.
You know, well, you know how on hotel rooms they have radio stations?
Yeah.
WGN.
At the
WCBS is on another station.
Yeah, at the Disney Resorts. We're on the television system there.
Yeah.
And you're watching
the
WGN channel, and you have us turned on, and you heard about our dilemma.
Yeah, I had you on while I was packing, and I heard you had your guest canceled, and I thought, well, I got nothing to do.
When I said, if there are any celebrities listening, It said Drew.
I was already on hold when he said that.
Yeah, it said Drew on the phone line. I thought, well, you know, somebody's goofing around saying that they're Drew Carey. Someone's going to call up and do a bad Drew Carey impersonation.
Oh, no. No, it's me.
Holy smokes. This is very cool.
See, so I'm going to make up for all the celebrities.
I love your show.
Thank you. Well, yeah, especially now.
You
saved your ass.
You did. Well, there's that. And there's that. Drew Carey show is seen in syndication on our sister station, WGN Television.
Oh, no kidding.
Here in Chicago.
Oh, that's good.
It's on every night at 6:30. I watch it all the time. I've come to a couple of tapings of your show. That's how much I like
it. Oh,
have
you? Nothing.
Yeah, it's fantastic.
Oh, thanks.
And you are, you're just like one of the hottest guys on ABC right now.
I was
now.
On during sweeps, the one couple of sweeps ago when I was on Geppetto and everything, I was on 6 hours of prime time.
Yeah, I mean, you're one of the...
I wonder if that was a record.
Besides Regis, I think you are probably the most seen person on ABC, right?
I beat Regis because he's only on for 3 hours. I was on 2 Millionaires. He's on 4 Millionaires that week, but I was on 2 Millionaires... Plus an hour of Drew Carey because they had 1.5 hours of repeat. An hour of Who's Line, which is the funniest show on TV.
You know what? It is absolutely hilarious. Tell me how. I mean, I know that's a show that started in England.
Oh, yeah, it's a radio show in England.
Right, but you just were a fan of that show and decided to adapt it and bring it to American TV.
Well, you know what? I never watched it till Ryan Stiles got. He's on Who's Line. He plays Lewis on the Drew Carey show.
Right.
Ryan Stiles got cast on the Drew Carey show. And he said, oh, I do the show Who's Line. I go, I heard about it on cable. And I never really watched it, and I watched it because he was on it. It's really funny. I don't know if you've never seen it, you have to watch it.
I watch it all the time. I watch it all the time. You know what? I'm not blowing smoke up your butt saying this to you. The American version, I think, is 100 times funnier. I don't know if it's...
The British producers think that the American version is better.
I think it's much funnier, and I don't know if it's the people that you have, Ryan Stiles, and the other comedians, the improvisational comedians whose names escape me, but the regular cast that you have on there are so hilarious.
Yeah, Ryan Stiles, Colin Mochrie, is the again Wayne Brady are always on the show. Wayne Brady does a lot of the music stuff, and then we rotate the fourth seat all the time. But those guys, those guys are so funny, and everybody says they like my show, and all I do is tell them what to do. I just read the stupid cards.
Yeah, but I think you have that. You're sort of the straight man for all of the madness that's going on.
Yeah, kind of. But that's all the funny stuff.
Yeah, well, it's essential though. You know, you're feeding everybody just the right thing. How much preparation is there? Absolutely no planning for the improvisational community.
Oh, yeah, it's all made up. Well,
they have no idea what's going to happen before
the performers don't, but it's really one of the most planned shows because everything that I read off the cards is planned ahead of time. And, like, we'll play games like a dating game where they, try to guess, they give each guy a character to play. You know, and so they'll pretend they're on a dating game, and they'll give each bachelor a character to play, and they have to try to guess who they are.
Mm-hmm.
And we try to make the characters something that the performer will do well, and characters that will interact with each other and stuff like that. So that kind of stuff is well thought out, even though the performers don't know what they're going to do. None of the performers ever know what they're going to do.
It's amazing.
But that kind of stuff we try to plan out ahead of time. And then when, if I'm going to do a hoedown, let's say, and I ask for a hoedown suggestion from the audience, they yell out all kinds of different stuff, and I try to pick out something that we can use the best. So it's not like we're trying to kill ourselves up there. We're trying to be as funny as we can be.
May 21st, 2000.
May 21st. There,
Drew Carey is packing.
Here's me. There's me from a retro time that we played that. So the actual anniversary is May 21st, 2000. Still 24 years ago this month. The famous Drew Carey conversation that took place. It's 10:31 coming up after the news. The Week in Theater and two-time Academy Award winner Michael Shannon joining us.
Hey, it's...
was moderating the evening with Phil Rosenthal from Somebody Feed Phil, the network Netflix series, a travel and culinary series. It was so fun, a sold-out night at the Chicago Theater, but as I was walking back to my car, Mamma Mia is on one side of me over at the Niederlander Theater that's playing. We've got the Simon and Garfunkel story that's over at the CIBC Theater. We've got, the Downtown Theater District was alive last night. Goodman Theater had things going on last night. It's a great time. And, also at the Cadillac Palace Theater, Death Becomes Her, which is the world premiere before it goes to Broadway. In a couple of minutes, we're going to share a conversation that we had
with the two stars of Death Becomes Her, Jennifer Simard and Jennifer Hilty. But first, I wanted to share with you a conversation that we had on WGN-TV Morning News the other day. I think it was Thursday, that two-time Oscar nominee Michael Shannon stopped by with one of his co-stars in the show, a young actor named Travis Knight. They are starring in a production called Turret, put on by the Red Orchid Theater Company, but is being performed at the Chopin Theater now through June the 9th. They've moved it over to the Chopin because it's a larger theater. They have larger requirements for sets and get more people in to see the show, etc. In the interview, they explain what the show is all about. But Travis Knight, two-time Oscar nominee, one of Chicago's very own, Michael Shannon. Here this morning, guys. Welcome. Nice to have you here.
Thanks for having
us. Welcome back, Michael.
Thank you.
For probably the first and most important thing that we should talk about is that Travis's son has turned 9 years old today.
He is. He is 9 years old as of today. Yeah, happy birthday, my
big
son.
Big happy birthday.
Love you very much.
4 o'clock this morning, getting ready to celebrate birthday today. So, Michael, tell me about Turret. What are we in for?
Yeah, it's kind of a futuristic sci-fi kind of a thriller, I guess, but. It's basically about the relationship between my character, Green, and Travis's character, Rabbit. I'm his, I guess, kind of mentor. Mm-hmm. We're soldiers. We're hiding out in this turret in a future where pretty much all of mankind has ceased to exist, and we're trying to make the best of it.
Mm-hmm. I love that you keep coming back. I mean, you are such an acclaimed actor now, known worldwide, but you keep coming back to a Red Orchid to do projects there. Mm-hmm. Why is that? What's the attraction?
Well, Red Orchid's just such a big part of who I am, what I do as an actor. I started there when I was still an adolescent, and I feel like I owe a lot to the theater that I learned so much there, working there, and met so many incredible artists. And I just want the theater to stick around. So I like to, I was going to say prop it up. That's not the right word.
Support it. You want to support it and bring attention to it. I think part of it is like, it's a Chicago actor thing to do. Yeah. Like a lot of the ensemble members at Steppenwolf also do the same thing because they want to, give back to where they got started.
Yeah, and, particularly post-pandemic, making sure a lot of theaters just barely squeaked by or some didn't make it. And I think it's important now that the theaters are back up and going to create exciting events that generate audiences.
Yeah. So, Travis, what's it like working opposite Michael? I have to think that is a formidable job for an actor to look into those eyes and deliver lines that you have to deliver.
Yeah. No, it's that's a great question, and Mike's heard me already talk about this ad nauseum, but it's an honor. It is the opportunity of a lifetime as an actor to be out there with someone who is, one of the best to ever do it. Yep. I'm also out there with Larry Grimm, who's also an incredible actor. And to be able to work opposite Mike, it's like it is a masterclass. I don't have to do much other than go out there, look at him, and respond to what I am receiving. And it's a real treat. It's a gift.
I would think it makes you elevate your game, doesn't it?
Yeah, I would say so. Yeah, it's like, I don't know, there's a challenge to it. I know going into rehearsal, I was like, well, it's time to really step up. And I love working on plays, and I love the rehearsal process, and I love getting out there and doing this thing in front of a live audience. And yeah, every single time we step on that stage, because the show is so demanding in so many different ways.
Yeah.
It's physically demanding. It's emotionally demanding. It's a really vulnerable heart of a play. And to be out there with someone like Mike, you have to you have to bring your A game every time. And yeah. I'm all about that. It's fun.
I think I might start calling you Mr. Rockstar after I've seen clips of you doing those dates where you were doing some nights celebrating REM's mm-hmm. Murmur album. Mm-hmm. I mean, you are. Look at you here, Mr. Rockstar.
Oh, dear. Hey. Look at that. There it is.
Yeah, you're like one step away of throwing yourself into the audience. With some
living the dream.
Yeah.
That's the 40 Watt Club in Athens, Georgia. Yeah. That's where REM started out, basically.
Dag Julian from Poi Dog.
Dag Julian, and there's
there.
Jason Narducci, and Nick, and Vijay, and yeah, it's an incredible band.
I have to think that was super fun. Would you go back out and do more music?
Or? Oh, well, we actually, we're going to do another tour at the beginning of next year, starting in February, with a whole other REM record. It went well, and people want to hear more, so yeah. We're going to do more.
So you're just a super REM fan?
I really am, actually, and I would say they're one of my favorite bands. But Jason and I, who I do this with, we've done a bunch of records. Other records, but yeah, there's really something about their music, and they actually are very appreciative of it. They came to the show, yeah. and that kind of blew our minds that we thought they would want file a cease and desist order or something, but they were into it. So
that's you.
Yeah.
In the meantime, you can see Turret. It is in previews now. It's running through June the 9th. It is from a Red Orchid Theater, but it's running over at the Chopin Theater, a beautiful space at Division in Ashland. Michael Shannon, Travis A. Knight, guys, thank you so much for coming in.
Absolutely.
Thanks,
really
appreciate
thanks for
it.
Us.
Great to see you.
Yeah, the tickets are available if you go to their website, aredorchidtheater.org. aredorchidtheater.org. The show is in previews right now until May 11th. And then official performances will begin on the 12th, and it'll run through June the 9th. As I say, I mean, the Red Orchid Theater is over on Wall Street in Old Town, but it's a smaller theater. It's truly a storefront theater, which is amazing to see Michael Shannon in small venues like that, because he is such a bigger-than-life dynamic performer. But they've moved this over to the Chopin Theater on Ashland Avenue, Ashland in Milwaukee, because it's a bigger theater, more audience members. The set required a bigger space, so that's why they're doing it over at the Chopin. But anyway, thank you to Michael Shannon and Travis Knight. And when we come back from the break, the two stars of Death Becomes Her, which is in its pre-Broadway world premiere run over at the Cadillac Palace Theater right now. That's coming up next. I've been hearing nothing but rave reviews about Mamma Mia, the ABBA musical, which is currently at the Nederlander Theater in the downtown theater district. A text from the 815 says, I know you usually pan Mamma Mia. We saw the play in Chicago yesterday and it was outstanding. Actually, that's not true. I don't usually pan the stage productions of Mamma Mia. They're actually pretty great, and I have been doing nothing but raving about these shows for like 25 years or however long Mamma Mia has been running. What I did pan was the movie version of Mamma Mia, because the actors who were the primary players in that really were not very good singers, in my opinion. Pierce Brosnan actually admitted to me that he should have never been in that role. So I wasn't the only one that felt that way. Even he felt that way. But that was only the movie version, never the stage versions. I've always enjoyed the stage versions of Mamma Mia. I hear this one is great. So I'm going to do my best to get around to seeing that one. The 773 area code says, I am one of two trombone players in the pit for Death Becomes Her at the Cadillac Palace Theater. Great score, great script, great cast. I have not felt this positive a vibe in a Broadway in Chicago production since working The Producers many years ago. Well, that was That was spectacular. The producers here, you know, doing their pre-Broadway run here in Chicago is quite spectacular. Death Becomes Her is the stage musical adaptation of the 1992 movie that so many people remember so fondly. This particular production that is Cadillac Palace Theater right now stars Michelle Williams, formerly of Destiny's Child. It stars Jennifer Hilty, a big prominent performer on Broadway. Jennifer Samard, a two-time Tony Award nominee, also a big deal on Broadway. And they're working out the show right here in Chicago before it will eventually move on to Broadway. They were so nice to come and visit us on the WGN Midday News this past week, Jennifer and Megan. And we learned a little about them and about their show.
Congratulations on this, because it's got to be so exciting. I mean, you're both so accomplished, but to be doing a pre-Broadway world premiere, I would think has to be extra special, is it?
It does feel very special to build something from the ground up like this, especially when it's built off of something that is so iconic and so beloved already.
And how, I mean, everyone has been commenting to me, hearing that this was coming. Mm-hmm. It's like, oh, I saw the movie. Oh, I love the movie. Mm-hmm. How similar is it to what people remember from the 1992 movie?
Excellent question. You're going to have to come and see all the Easter eggs that we've sprinkled throughout the musical.
Yes.
And, of course, the writers have taken it in the direction that only musical theater can bring, and it's just added frosting to an already delicious cake.
Yeah, and you have quite a cast with you.
Yes.
Here in Chicago, don't you?
Yes. Christopher Sieber, mm-hmm, and Michelle Williams. They're remarkable. Everybody. Mm-hmm. It feels like every day I'm pinching myself because, mm-hmm, we're surrounded, cast, crew, creative team. It's just the best of the best.
Yeah. What's it like to be working with a Destiny's Child member?
It's amazing.
It's gotta be kind of cool.
She is so wildly talented, and she is also so warm and lovely, and so fun to work with.
So humble, and mm-hmm, just dove right into this with such abandon, and you just have to come see her tear up the stage.
Yeah.
And our ensemble, the unsung heroes of any show, they are some of the most wonderful human beings and talents you'll ever see.
I always have such admiration for actors, especially, that are working in pre-Broadway productions,
mm-hmm,
because it's been my experience in observing this is that they are changing your script every single day,
mm-hmm,
probably,
yeah,
several times a day,
yeah,
I would imagine. What's that process like?
We just had a big scene go in last night, and we were so proud of ourselves because we nailed
it. We did it.
Is it just dialogue, or is it like...
Sometimes it's songs.
It's like songs are coming in and songs are coming out, right?
That's right, and that's part of the excitement. Go ahead.
Yeah, oh, I'm so sorry. But what that also does is it changes huge technical cues. There, mm-hmm, are so many elements that, yes, we're doing an extra scene, but then they have to, mm-hmm, really work overtime backstage to make all of that stuff happen.
That's right, and our stage manager, Rachel Sterner, and the team she's assembled is probably one of the best I've ever worked with.
Ever.
You agree?
Yes.
I know.
Yeah.
We talk about it.
Yeah.
All the time.
And also in Chicago, this is such a great theater town, and I hope your citizens and fans know that, because what a gem. Mm-hmm. And the local crew here, the locals here, to a person, have been just amazing. And I can see why a lot of shows come here to try out.
And the audiences, too. The audiences, mm-hmm, are so warm and receptive. The energy is electric. But also, we know immediately what works and what doesn't.
Yeah.
Really savvy.
So savvy.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Oh, mm-hmm.
I always
you owe me a Coke.
I always tell the story about how when Mel Brooks brought the producers here, mm-hmm, before, mm-hmm, I went to Broadway,
mm-hmm,
and I talked to him about it. He said, I would never do a pre-Broadway show any place but Chicago, because the audiences give us so much back.
Yeah,
I agreed.
Can't mm-hmm top that.
No.
Death Becomes Her will run through June the 2nd. It's at the Cadillac Palace Theater. If you want to get more information, you can go to BroadwayInChicago.com.
There you go. The show is going to be here in the Chicago area, playing through June the 2nd. Among its stars, Megan Hilty and Jennifer Simard. I got their first names cross-wired. Megan Hilty, Jennifer Simard, joining us to talk about their new show. Talking about A-listers, we've got some good ones still to come on the show here today from New Kids on the Block. St. Charles' very own Donnie Wahlberg joining us in our next hour. And on the WGN-TV morning news this coming week, Chris Pine, who has made his directorial debut with a new movie that's called Poolside. Danny DeVito is one of his stars. So we'll be talking with Chris and with Danny. Some of you will remember that Chris gave me a fantastic recipe for lemon pasta maybe a year, 2 years ago, something. I make it all the time. It is so delicious. And wait till you hear how he reacts when I tell him how much I love that recipe and how often I make it and how Danny DeVito reacts to Chris Pine and I talking about Italian cooking. It's hilarious. And coming up this week on WGN Morning News, celebrities, people who you would never have met in your life before came on the Phil Donahue Show. And Phil Donahue really helped to create what daytime television has become. He is quite legendary. He's been back many times to WGN. When he's come to Chicago, he's always been nice enough to come and join us. We actually reset the entire studio one time, a couple of visits ago. We made Studio 2 look just like it did when Phil Donahue did his show. We had a studio audience. You know, and that was a big part. I can't think of anybody who included the studio audience in asking questions before Phil Donahue did it. I mean, he was a groundbreaker in so many ways. So it's very much appropriate that he was honored yesterday in Washington, D.C., with the Presidential Medal of Freedom. He and many others, including Jim Thorpe, by the way, Andy, big sports name, was honored with the Presidential Medal of Freedom yesterday. Phil is in a wheelchair right now. He seemed to be in pretty good spirits, but apparently is having some trouble walking. So he was in a wheelchair when President Biden put the medal around his neck. And it was described, Phil's career was encapsulated before the president honored him with this very prestigious award.
From Irish Catholic roots in Cleveland, Phil Donahue rose to transform television and reshape the national conversation. Over 29 years, nearly 7,000 episodes, and 20 Emmys, he pioneered the live daytime talk show, holding a mirror up to America. He interviewed everyone from our greatest stars to our forgotten neighbors, uniting us around the toughest issues of our time. Insatiably curious and accepting, he saw every guest as worthy of interest and worked to build understanding, bringing us to see each other not as enemies, but as fellow Americans.
With that the round of applause and the big old signature Phil Donahue smile, President Biden put the ribbon and medal around his neck. Marlo Thomas, his wife, was, of course, at the ceremony as well. Marlo and Phil first met in Studio 2 at 2501 West Bradley Place in Chicago. She was a guest on Phil Donahue's show. If you go back, you can find it on YouTube. You go back and listen to that interview or watch the interview. I think there's a video of it. These two were flirting like crazy. They clearly had an attraction back from their very first meeting. And they have been married since about, I think, 1980, right around then, I believe, is when they got married. She was on hand for all of that. It's so important. I mean, there's so many talk shows now, so many different kinds of talk shows, but Phil Donahue really was the first to redefine the whole thing. Before there was an Oprah Winfrey, there was a Phil Donahue, and he was the one really that broke ground in so many different ways in the area of daytime talk, in so many substantial ways. I mean, talking to celebrities and famous people, but he brought people in with such diverse backgrounds. It was fascinating to watch it every day. When we come back from the break, I want to play a clip from the last time that Phil Donahue was here on the show with us. It was following the passing of world champion Muhammad Ali at the time, who was friends with Phil Donahue and had appeared with him several times on the show. But Phil Donahue remembers Muhammad Ali and his days at working at WGN TV. When we come right back. 11:21, Dean Richards, Sunday morning on WGN. Phil Donahue is always so generous to us with his time. Whenever we would call for him to come on the radio show or on the TV morning news, whenever he was in town, he always said yes. He was always so, so down to earth and friendly and professional, thoughtful, articulate. I just think he's one of the great broadcasters of all time, in my opinion. He was on the show about 4 years ago with his wife, Marlo Thomas. They had written a book about married couples. And it's a fantastic book that tells the story of famous couples. But a few years before that, in 2016, when Muhammad Ali had passed away, we had Phil on the show to remember the champ. He had been on Phil Donahue's show many times and was friends with him. But, of course, we also spent some time talking with Phil Donahue about the 8 years that he had spent doing his show out of our WGN Studios 2 at 2501 West Bradley Place.
Well, that was a wonderful. I spent 8 years at WGN. And I grew up in Cleveland. So I grew up with the Indians. And our hero in the late 40s and 50s was Lou Boudreau, 24-year-old player manager, shortstop, who all he had to do was walk in from the shortstop to the mound to pull a pitcher. And at the end of my program at WGN, I think we aired at 10:30 in the morning, I would say goodbye to the audience. I would get in my car and drive down. Is it Ashland or Addison?
Addison.
Going down to Wrigley.
To Wrigley Field. Straight shot down Addison, right.
Yeah, Addison. And I would park. And in those days, the Tribune Company not only owned the newspaper, but they owned the Cubs and Wrigley Field.
Right.
And I would park my car at the curb, wave at the cops, walk in the press gate and go up to the booth and sit and watch the game with Lou Boudreau.
How about that?
I mean, this was a fantasy. When I think of how much when I played baseball, I tried to copy his stance at the plate. In those days, the outfield and infield would throw their gloves on the field. Most of your viewers are too young to remember, and run into the dugout and prepare to bat. I would throw my glove on the field. I was second baseman. I'd throw my glove on the field just like Lou Boudreau.
Fantastic.
And here I am sitting there watching the game with Lou Boudreau and Vince Lloyd.
I can only imagine what a thrill
for me.
Yeah, when Ron Santo joined our broadcast team here at WGN Radio. I mean, I grew up as a kid watching Ron Santo at Wrigley Field.
Right.
And when he became part of our broadcast team, I couldn't believe that I knew Ron Santo and Ron Santo knew me. And when I would go up to that same press box that you were going up to, and would stand there as Ron Santo would, you know, broadcast the games. I had the same surreal feelings that I couldn't believe that I was standing there as it was happening.
You know, I went to the Cubs camp. You know, the place in Mesa.
The fantasy camp, yeah.
Out in Arizona.
Yeah.
Where you go and try not to act your age.
Yeah.
And, you know, all the Cubs were there. It was run by Randy Hundley. Gene Oliver, who caught Gibby for the Cardinals, also played a big role in this. But, you know, that was a big kick, especially, you know, after practice. You know, I caught, like, you know, because I'm such a tough guy. And by the second day, I couldn't walk. And I remember asking Jody Davis if he could squat. And he said no. I that's where I learned what a punishing position the catcher has.
Yeah.
But, oh, it's the best position in all of sport. I mean, you got the whole field in front of you. Nobody throws that ball until you throw down the signal, the sign. And, you know, to have that kind of power for at least a moment was a big deal for me. I enjoyed it.
I can imagine. Another WGN memory for you was meeting your wife Marlo in the hallways of WGN. And that is true. I understand that you and Marlo just last month celebrated your 36th wedding anniversary. Congratulations.
Thank you. Yes, indeed. 36 years. We were married at her home in her parents' home in Beverly Hills. Her father is Danny Thomas, who, as you know, founded St. Jude Children's Research Hospital. No, I'm still on the phone.
Is she telling you to get off the phone?
No, she wanted to know if I still was on.
Oh.
I'm sure if she was here, she'd want me to say hello for you. My father-in-law raised his, you know, he founded St. Jude,
right,
in Memphis.
Exactly.
And he raised his glass and he said, "I haven't lost a daughter, I've gained a fundraiser."
That's right.
That was 1980, so that was 36 years ago.
Still going strong. Still going strong after all these years. What are you doing now, Phil? You know, we miss seeing you on the air. We miss your very important voice.
Thank you.
What keeps you busy these days?
Thank you. Well, I made a documentary. Took a long time and a sinful amount of money. It's a shame, really. It shouldn't be that expensive. But this was the story of a young man who went to, it's an anti-Iraq war documentary. And it's the story of a young man who went to Iraq, and he was there 5 days, and he took a bullet from a rooftop, came down, it entered his shoulder area and exited T4 on his spine. So that's between the shoulder blades. He was paralyzed from the nipples down. He was like a rag doll. And I just couldn't get over. I met him at Walter Reed, and I just looked down at this young man, 24 years old, prime of life, can't walk, can't cough, impotent. And I thought, you know, people should see this. I thought this was the most sanitized war of my lifetime. I mean, the president said you can't take pictures of the coffins, and the whole press corps said, okay. And I felt, you know, if you're going to send these young men and women to war, show the sacrifice. Let the people who you've risked your life for see what price they're paying. And so I chose myself, and Milo and I flew to Kansas City after he had left Walter Reed and talked to him about it at home. And I said, his name was Thomas Young. And I said, I want to show the harm in harm's way.
Yeah, that documentary, by the way, is called Body of War. And it is available, you know, for those interested in seeing it. Phil Donahue has now been married 44 years to Marlo Thomas, and yesterday received the Presidential Medal of Freedom from President Biden. Congratulations to our longtime pal, Phil Donahue. We continue with our Dean's List A-List interview with the stars. I know I'm taking a lot of you back to your childhoods with the New Kids on the Block when they broke back in the mid-80s. People had just never seen boy bands like this before. There have been many since then. Few as popular as New Kids on the Block, selling something like 180 million albums, something like that, over the years. They have, you know, gone through waves of popularity, but they are definitely on the upswing again with tours and new albums and new music. One of the New Kids has decided to become one of Chicago's very own. He married Jenny McCarthy, originally from Plainfield. They are living in the St. Charles area right now and loving it. And since they have been here in the Chicago area, we've had both Jenny and Donnie on our TV morning news many times. We've had them here on my radio show as well. And last week, actually, I spent some time with Donnie on a Zoom call talking about all the new projects that they've got coming out, reflecting on the popularity of New Kids on the Block, and a special WGN invitation that we threw out to them as well. Let's go to the tape with New Kid on the Block, Donnie Wahlberg. How you doing there, buddy? It's good to see you.
You as well. You look younger every time I see you.
Oh, well, you better. I think you may need these glasses more than I do. If that's
I have my own. I'm not wearing them. Maybe.
Oh, okay. Maybe that's that may be the why that is then.
Yeah, sorry.
This is a busy time for you, isn't it? You've got so much going on with Donnie or the New Kids on the Block Day. It's like 30 years plus that it's been proclaimed such. You've got new music coming out. You've got new albums. Walk me through some of the stuff that's going on.
Well, Dean, it's, you know what? I'll give you the short and sweet answer, and then I'll give you the dragged out answer. The short and sweet answer is it's 14-year-old Donnie Wahlberg's dreams realized 40 years later. It's probably the best way to say it. You know, so it's the point being, I don't complain about being busy. I'm just doing all these things I always wanted to do, and they're all just seem to be all coming to fruition around the same time. So I just kind of go with the flow and figure out how to make it work. Fortunately, I have different people, bandmates, and different people that participate in a lot of this stuff and help me manage my end of it. But yeah, we have Wednesday is New Kids on the Block Day. Technically in the state of Massachusetts, and it was technically only one day 35 years ago when they made that proclamation, but we just decided, more specifically our fans, the New Kids on the Block fans, the Blockheads, they decided it's going to be an ongoing thing. So we took orders from them and have made it an ongoing thing. So we celebrate every year with them in some form. We have a new album coming out in May. We have a single out right now called Kids. We may be sneaking a song out on Wednesday for the New Kids on the Block Day. I'm not supposed to say that, but you might have just got the exclusive, Dean.
Yeah, I actually have it right here on my phone. The details. A Love Like This.
Yes, sir. You already know.
Is that the song? So you didn't blow it. You didn't blow it. My spies gave me that. So this is a single from the new album that's going to be coming out.
The new album. We're calling it a gratitude track, a fan appreciation track. It's a real song. It's a phenomenal song. It's one of my probably two favorite songs on the album. Gorgeous song. And I think the fans are going to just flip over it. And, you know, along with that, I'm still filming Blue Bloods. I'm prepping for the tour, the Magic Summer Tour 2024 this summer. And what else am I doing? I'm producing with our new executive producer the next season of Very Scary People. I mean, you name it. I'm running around to Wahlburgers whenever I can. And
That's so crazy, being a right?
Husband and a dad and a brother and a Celtics fan and you name it.
Yeah, well, you know, I was going to ask you, one of my questions before you even said anything about this is that you must pinch yourself on a regular basis, considering how you guys started, how things have evolved, where you came from, and now how everything has exploded and everything that you've got going on. How do you even reflect on all that?
Well, I do pinch myself from time to time. I would say rather than actually physically pinch myself, I think Jenny and I both really take time to just give gratitude. You know, we wake up in the morning and say, thank you, thank you, thank you, thank you, thank you. You know, thanks for waking us up again for another day to, you know, see what life has to offer and for bringing us together and for really making both of our dreams come true. You know, Southside Chicago girl and a Dorchester boy from Boston, you know, who very, very humble beginnings. And, you know, probably most people in our lives thought we were crazy when we dreamed these big dreams and made these big plans at 14 and 15 years old. But, you know, we believed and worked really hard at a really young age to find opportunities. So there's that aspect of it, you know, pinching ourselves or being grateful. But there's also the other side of it, too, is, you know, remembering that as busy as I sound, as challenging as things sound right now, people work every day and do a zillion things that are much more difficult than what I'm doing. You know, I'm griping about filming a TV show. You know, it's like, oh, I spent an hour in hair and makeup today and getting dressed in wardrobe, you know, while dad drove a truck and my mom cleaned floors before she worked in a bank. And then before she, you know, became, worked in a baby hospital, you know, it's like so many people work so hard. And the last thing they want to do is hear, us celebrity types complain about how hard we work. You know, I do work hard. I admit it. I don't get a lot of time to do things I want to do and I don't get a lot of free time, but that's the price I'm willing to pay to be able to do the things that I love to do. And I'll never complain about it. I'll never not be grateful for it. And I certainly do my best to not be disrespectful to all the people, you know, who work their tails off to just get by in these challenging times. I'm certainly very much aware of how fortunate I am, as is Jenny. We try to instill that into our kids and remind them, you know, how fortunate we are. And that it took a lot of hard work and, you know, but it doesn't mean this is the only path. You know, there's hardworking people all over the place who work hard to keep the lights on, keep food in their refrigerator, keep the heat on in the winter.
Right.
So we want to be respectful of that and also teach our kids that, you know, if you do that, that's okay. That's not a failure. You know, success is what you make it. It's how you see it. You know, you know, my parents, to me, I look back at my parents who ended up divorced and got the power turned off from time to time and could barely put food on the table, you know, under the circumstances and how they were raised and what they grew up with and what they managed to pull off with 9 kids. I would say they were successful as they could be. And results are their other children, not just myself and Mark, their other children are all doing well in their respective lives. And whether that's one who is a power line inspector in Massachusetts or one who's a carpenter or one who works in a library. They're all raising their children and doing the best they can and have made our parents proud as well.
Yeah. It's not to minimize at all what other people do, but you know, I think of the people who are going to be working out on the expressways and tollways in the hot summer months
or the cold winter, right?
It's, you know, or the cold winter. But you know, I know for a fact, I've seen you in action, I've seen Jenny in action. It's hard and very stressful work that you guys do as well. Different, but yeah. I think what you talk about of, you know, finding something that you love to do and giving your all to it, no matter what the profession is, no matter what the vocation is. That's really what's important.
And there's luck, you know, there's a lot of luck involved too, Dean. You know, it's hard work and commitment and finding the path and staying on the path when you know, failures happen and picking up the pieces and moving forward. But, you know, there's a lot of luck involved too. Any famous person, any successful person, if they're honest and they look back on their journey, there was a moment where they turned left instead of right. And had they turned right, you know, there's a version of my life, I'll just say this way, where I could be working out on the tollways this summer in the hot. And that would have been a phenomenal career for me. I would have been grateful that I could do that and pay the bills, you know. And I'm not too unrealistic to say that. And I mean that with all due respect to anyone who does that for a living. You know, it's any one of us who are successful in our chosen paths in entertainment, music, you name it. There's a version of this where, you know, the road turned a different way and it didn't work out. And hopefully we would have picked up the pieces and been happy with how things turned out.
More with Donnie Wahlberg coming up in just a minute. It's 11:47. More with new kid on the block, Donnie Wahlberg, talking about his tour, talking about a brand new album, all kinds of new things going on for Donnie Wahlberg.
We are looking forward to you coming back with the boys for the Magic Summer Tour. It's going to be June 15th at Credit Union One Amphitheater out in Tinley Park. This sounds like one of your bigger shows that you've ever done, and bringing back you're bringing back some friends, but a million memories, it sounds like.
Yeah. Well, one thing we've done the last few years on tour is we've sort of done these mashed up shows where it's a mixtape tour, which is designed to feel like a mixtape, except it's brought to life with performers on stage and songs going back and forth from artist to artist. But this time we wanted to go back really for the Blockheads, really to take them back in time and forward in time, but to sort of have another summer of magic. It's a full new kid show. We have opening acts, Paula Abdul and DJ Jazzy Jeff, but it's a new kid show. There's not going to be, you know, an integration of other artists popping up on stage. It's our show. We're going to, you know, really try to put on a really fun and exciting show for the fans and give them something that's all new kids. You know, I know we love working with other artists, but this one is about the fans sort of connecting back to the past, but also bringing it forward. You know, the magic is not going to be in magic tricks. We're not going to do that again like we did in 1990. But the magic is in the moments and the memories and getting to still share these experiences and to still feel like kids again, despite our disagreeable joints and bones. You know, but it's a chance for us all to go out and feel like kids again all these years later and celebrate this very special bond that we have.
Yeah.
Our amazing fans.
Now, you are in St. Charles right now, right? You're home, right?
Yeah.
How often do you get back home?
As much as I can. You know, of course, there was COVID that happened and kind of made traveling back and forth a little difficult for a while. But
yeah.
Right now, you know, at least two weekends a month, sometimes more. You know, when my son and my stepson were going to high school out here, I sort of put into my contract that I need Fridays off so I could, you know, see my son play in the marching band and go to the game with my stepson and be part of that experience. You know, since I was missing the other 4 days of the week off, and I wanted to at least get that weekends with them. So, but I come back as often as I can. Sometimes I'll just hop in a van and drive home if I have a window of time. Sometimes I'll just run over to LaGuardia Airport and just get a last second ticket, hop on American Airlines or something and fly to O'Hare.
Yep.
Drive home, have my car in the parking garage, drive home, spend the night, and literally drive back and film the next night in New York.
Nice. So, wow.
Yeah. I can. I love being here. Obviously, I love my wife and our family and the life that we've built here in St. Charles. And I try to get here as often as possible, especially the summers. We didn't tour last year, so I got to really Jenny tells me every summer when I'm on tour, you're missing the most gorgeous summer. And I know the winters in Illinois, they're brutal, although this one wasn't that bad. But the summers, I really, last summer gave me a chance to really, really enjoy an Illinois summer, I think, in to its fullest for the first time. And it was a gorgeous summer. And yeah, so, I mean, how could I not want to get back here?
So when you guys come back on June 15th for the show, what I want to do is I want to meet you out at your Wahlburgers restaurant in St. Charles, okay, in your backyard. But what I want to do is bring the Bozo Grand Prize game buckets. Now, this may not mean anything to Mr. Boston, but you just, I mean, Jenny was on the Bozo show. She knows how big these Grand Prize game buckets are and playing this game. I want to bring them out and put them right in front of your restaurant and have you and the boys and the fans get a chance to play the grand prize game. How does that sound to you?
What about Jenny? She's going to be pushing everyone out of the way to play.
Like, Jenny gets to be first in line because she's a Bozo show veteran. Yeah,
she definitely got to do Bozo, the Bozo show. She got to do it and appear on it. We had our own version of Bozo. I didn't realize these things sometimes were regional back in my childhood, right? So there was a Bozo show for Chicago, and there was a Bozo show in Boston that was, and it was this really respected film guy who hosted a nighttime series on a local affiliate or local channel called The Movie Law. And he would talk about a very serious guy. Frank Avrush. I don't think he hosted the movie a lot, but he hosted something. But he was a very serious, dramatic guy.
Yep.
He was also Bozo in Boston. And I was like, I want to go on that show and win those prizes. I know I could do it. I never got a chance. So, Dean,
we're bringing the buckets out to Wahlburgers when you come back in June. It's a date then, for sure.
We're
going
to have to find a Bozo, though. We got to get someone to be the Bozo costume.
We got plenty of Bozos at WGN. Don't worry. Nothing. We got Bozos falling all over each other. The new album is out on May the 17th called Still Kids. The new song, A Love Like This, comes out on New Kids on the Block Day.
I didn't spoil it.
Nope, you didn't do it. I did. I got my secret intelligence. Magic Summer 2024 tour with the New Kids, Paula Abdul, and DJ Jazzy Jeff will be at the Credit Union One Amphitheater in Tinley Park on Saturday, June 15th. Donnie, it is always fantastic to talk to you, and we look forward to seeing you when you come back to town soon. Thanks, pal.
Same, my friend. Look forward to it as well.
Take care.
Bye.
All right,
stay
buddy.
At the Wahlburgers with Bozo prizes.
I will, and if you guys are into it, we will definitely bring the whole rig out there and go crazy. I'm telling you what, it'll be in the newspaper. This game, people go nuts over this grand prize bucket game.
I mean, I hope it has one of those old racetracks with the cars that are magnetic on the track.
You know what it is? It's six buckets in a row. You stand on one end and you drop ping pong balls into each of the buckets. Yeah. It's much harder than it seems.
I know.
You know,
outdoors is going to be terrible. But I want a prize. I want like a race car set. Like
the grand prize when you got all six buckets was a Schwinn bike. You know,
man,
when you were a kid, that was everything. So you know, we'll work something out. Right. Donnie, thanks so much, pal. It's really good to talk to you, and we'll catch up soon.
Yes, sir.
There you go. Donnie Wahlberg at about the grand prize game, isn't he? Jenny will be even more excited because she was actually on the Bozo show when she was a kid. We'll work on that and hopefully get all that done. We've got our Food Time show coming up in the next hour. Turned into a really nice afternoon here so far.
It's looking very nice out there, yes.
Not that I wasn't hanging on Tim's every word during the weather forecast, but is it going to rain later on today?
It could. We have a chance of... we had a good storm last night around 6:30.
We did.
There could rain later today. It will be likely more rain tonight, overnight, and a chance for some storms tomorrow as well.
Mm, okay. All right. Because a lot of people, the Eastern Orthodox celebrating Easter today. And, you know, kids are doing their Easter egg hunt and all that stuff.
So. Mm-hmm. Yep. Yep. Well, it is.
We don't want the kitties to get wet up.
No, you don't want
Uncle
that.
Uncle Dean's having a scotch inside the house.
Maybe your relatives will invite me.
Boy, those kids look wet out there. Somebody should go get those kids. They look wet outside. 1209 Dean Richards, Sunday morning, WGN. To get into our food time show, it's going to be a multifaceted food show today. Because we've got so much that's going on today. We've got the Greek Easter. And a lot of people have asked for the recipe that I did on television the other day for pastizo, which is the Greek lasagna. This is actually my mom's, my grandmother's recipe. We do our pastizo a little different than a lot of most places where they do. It's a mixture of macaroni and ground beef or lamb or both. With a bechamel sauce. Most people do the pasta and beef as one layer and then put the bechamel on top for like a super creamy topping on the whole thing. My mother and grandmother always mixed the bechamel into the pasta. So the whole thing was nice and creamy. And the top, they would put some grated cheese. You can use like a Parmesan cheese if you want to, but there's a Greek cheese, which is a sharp cheese very similar to Parmesan called Mizithra cheese. That's fantastic. And you know how if you have cheese on top of any kind of casserole, it browns. It's delicious. They throw some breadcrumbs on there also, so it's nice and crispy. So that's the version that I do. We call it a village-style pastizo. And I'll tell you, it's a little bit of a complicated recipe to explain. It's really three simple parts that we have posted, and I'll tell you where you can go to get that in a few minutes. I'll give you a quick overview of the whole thing in a few minutes. But also today, I wanted to get into talking about Mexican food, because today is Cinco de Mayo. It's a big celebration. It's been Mexican Day celebrations at Navy Pier all weekend, and in Little Village all weekend celebrations are going on. So I wanted to talk about favorite Mexican restaurants. Are you a fan of Mexican food, Andy? I never know with Andy because you're such a picky eater.
I was just telling Gaswani, my wife and I went to a Mexican restaurant last night.
Oh, what? Look at this.
Yeah.
Which one was that?
It's a neighborhood joint. Can't remember the name of it, actually. Now,
is it on Montrose by any chance?
No, it's up on Clybourne.
Clybourne.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Because I went to a place a couple of weeks ago on Montrose. It used to be a Greek restaurant 5-7 years ago, something like that. But now it's a Mexican restaurant, and I'm not sure how to pronounce the name of this restaurant. Let me spell it for you and see if you can be as confused as I am. It's X-O... C-H-I-M-I-L-C-O.
Xochimilco.
I know exactly. We've eaten there before, and it's fantastic.
Isn't the food spectacular?
It is absolutely fantastic.
My first time going there. But it's a little bit, I don't want to call it upscale, because I don't want to put people off thinking it's like fancy schmancy, you're going to be uncomfortable.
No, not at all.
It's a nice casual restaurant.
And it's a BYOB, I think.
It is BYOB, yeah. Which I love.
Yeah.
I mean, Schwani walks around with a half a pint in his pocket all the time anyway. So,
especially on May 5th.
May the 5th be with you.
Yeah, it's fantastic. The food's really good there.
I love
that. And the salsa that they bring out at the beginning, it's be careful.
Yeah.
It's a little warm.
tiny bit spicy. Yeah. Is Schwani pronounce it again?
Xochimilco. It's a part of the neighborhood, you might call it, in Mexico City.
Oh.
Xochimilco.
Xochimilco. Is that common, like the X-O-C?
In Spanish,
is
yes.
Is pronounced that way?
Yes, in Spanish.
Xochimilco.
Xochimilco.
That's Montrose, a little west of Damon, if I'm not mistaken.
Correct.
Yeah,
correct. Really good place. But I want to open up the phone lines for, you know, your favorite Mexican food. Of course, Rick Bayless's Frontier Grill, Topolobampo. Those are always amazing. I have a few other favorites, which I'll share in a couple of minutes. We'll get some of yours. Andy, do you have you said the place on Clyde?
Yeah, it's called Mi Tierra Nueva.
Okay.
I'm not mistaken. They have a little outdoor place. It's run by a family. They're really sweet people. We go in there quite a bit.
Can you beat places where they're like family-run restaurants?
No. I mean, the attention to detail there, I mean, just the, and the food is just really, really good.
Yeah. How about you, Shwani? Got a favorite? Taco Bell?
Shwani's ignoring you.
Sorry, I have a newsroom to run.
Yeah, I saw you. I saw you yawning, running your newsroom.
I was.
It's the problem with these conference. Damn these cameras that they have on us. We see everything that's going on.
I was in conference with a colleague here. Mm-hmm. So,
yeah, I'd like mine without mayo and rye bread, please.
What were you asking?
If you have a favorite restaurant. You know, we
have all kinds of favorite restaurants.
You know, there's a show going on here right now, right?
Yes, but I was in conference.
I don't know
with
if you know that every Sunday we do this show here from 9 until 1.
Every Sunday.
Yeah. So
I have a number of specifically Mexican places.
Yeah, Mexican, yes. Because it's Cinco de Mayo. That's
yes.
Why I'm asking.
There's a place that there are a few tables in it, but it's largely a takeout place called Taco Maya. That's in my neighborhood. Very good fajitas. Mm-hmm. Also,
where's on, that? Can I say what neighborhood it is?
South State in the South Loop.
Yeah, okay.
And then on South Michigan, just before you get to 22nd Street to Cermak, there's a place called La Cantina, which is very good. Watch the margaritas in there; they're very good.
Oh boy!
But those are some favorites of mine, and I remember. Back in the 1980s, I don't know if if it's still there or not. It was in the Bridgeport area. It was called Mi Tierra, which was quite good.
I'm looking up.
They had a great carne asada in there.
Oh man,
doesn't that sound good?
Such so good food. There's a restaurant called Fernando's.
Fernando's is great
on Lincoln Avenue.
They're still there. Yeah,
still there. They've been open. I don't know how many
years. That's a family-run place.
That is a place where I've lost thousands, if not millions, of brain cells on their margaritas.
Yes.
They make a killer margarita at Fernando's.
You know, one of the family members also ran a place, I believe, on the State Parkway called the Blue Agave.
Oh, yeah. I remember the Blue Agave.
Mm-hmm.
By the way, my local one is Mi Nueva Tierra.
Mi Nueva Tierra.
Yeah.
Mi Nuevo?
My new Nueva land.
Tierra.
My new land.
Yeah. Look at you all bilingual.
Had to look it up because it didn't sound right when I was saying it.
I must tell you, though, the finest Mexican food I have ever had was in Santa Fe, New Mexico.
Oh, well, forget it.
At a place called Gabriel's.
Yeah.
Oh, outstanding.
Did they comp the food there for you?
No, they didn't. I didn't go in saying, well, maybe you know me. No, I didn't.
Well, I just know anytime Shwani mentions a restaurant, usually there's some.
There's some gratis involved.
There's a little something going on.
No, I'll tell you when
Senor Schwan, sit down. We made some appetizers for you.
They made fresh guacamole for us there. Yes.
Oh, we have fresh guacamole for you, Mr. Senor Schwan.
Senior Schwani.
Are you going to mention us on your show?
Senior Schwani.
Senior Schwani. We have to acknowledge something, Schwani. I don't know if you know that this coming, is it Friday, which is an Andy Mazur birthday?
Oh, yeah.
Is it Friday?
Yep.
Okay.
Another trip around the sun will be complete.
It's Andy Mazur Day. You don't have to feed parking meters.
Nope. No mail.
Court will be closed.
Banks
that
closed.
Day.
Yep.
Banks are closed.
Yep.
All in on Andy Mazur Day.
Yep. Friday.
No mail.
Yep. So I'm mentioning it today so people have time to buy very expensive gifts.
Yeah. Shopping days are very critical.
And send them to Andy.
My classmates were always very angry with me in grade school when I would write on the board only X amount of shopping days till my birthday.
Did you really do
yeah,
that?
Would do that? Yeah.
That's
hilarious. I was a snot-nosed little kid. Come on.
That's hilarious. Are you going to share your age with us?
Sure. I'll be 57.
Look at you.
Yeah.
Young Andy Mazur.
I'll be 57. It was funny. I was thinking back to the day that I actually started here at WGN the first time around, and I think I was 33.
Wow. I thought I would have guessed you to be, I still would guess you to be much younger.
Yeah, I think I was 33.
You have a very youthful appearance.
About, well, thank you.
Unlike Schwani and I, then. During the Kentucky Derby yesterday, two people offered to take me out back and shoot me. So.
Glue.
Yeah, what's your favorite kind of glue?
That's what. That was the tip-off.
That was a great race.
That was an awesome race.
Wow. Talk about a photo finish.
Yeah.
Three wide for a photo finish. Closest race they've had there since 1996.
Wow.
Yeah.
It's they measure that electronically, I imagine.
Yeah, they do.
Now,
they, right? They have the wire, and they have the photo gets taken right at the
literally at photo the finish.
Yeah, so they go back. The stewards will look at it, and they'll try to associate which nose of which horse is first across the wire, and that's who it was.
Yeah. Do they still? Oh no, I was thinking of the milk. That's the Indy 500.
That's the Indy 500. Yeah. Which we'll have on the air in a couple weeks.
I know.
Yep.
I know. I'm already planning my day off that
day. Yes, you are. Should be a fun race there.
Okay.
On the original home of the Indianapolis 500.
I'm fascinated. Excuse me for being distracted.
Right.
I'm fascinated what Schwani's doing.
I'm trying to do my job.
What are you
here.
Doing?
I have a newsroom to run.
What are you doing?
I'm working on a story.
You know, you're,
for 12:30.
You know you're making a sandwich in there. I know you're making a sandwich.
I'm working on what I'm going to air in 9 minutes.
Okay. Or I'll say
that is a newscast.
The
you know.
Same thing that you've been airing all morning.
Well, we have additional information here, so okay. we need to adjust this.
All right. Well,
that's another way of me saying, don't talk to me.
Yeah,
okay.
Wow. Well, don't worry. I have a button here to facilitate that. Don't worry. All right. Well, I can hardly wait to hear which story you're updating coming up in a few minutes. And we'll get into our food time show today. We're going to talk Mexican food in Chicago. I've got some recipes for the Greek Easter that you may be interested in. Also, Mother's Day is next Sunday. Look how that snuck up on us. What are your plans for Mother's Day? Moms, what do you want your families to do for Mother's Day, food-wise? Do you want them to destroy your kitchens and make something? Do you prefer going out? Do you have a favorite Mother's Day spot that you love? Let's open up the phone lines for all those things. 312-981-7200. Kalopaska to you. Happy Easter. Big day of resurrection for Eastern, all of Eastern Orthodoxy. We've had a lot of people, Ukrainian Orthodox also celebrating today, Russian Orthodox, Serbian Orthodox we've heard from today. Happy Easter to all of you, and hope you have wonderful celebrations with your family and your friends. Food will be a big part of that. People have been sending me, I was talking about this earlier, about how back in the day we used to take a whole lamb, put it on a spit, and started roasting it. Somebody texted a memory that they remember all of their dad and their uncles outside turning the lamb on the spit all day long, and there would be an empty bottle of scotch to go along. Go along with it all. That was very much a part of it as well. Whether it was scotch or... Have you ever had, Schwani, have you ever had the Greek brandy metaxa?
I've had metaxa. I've had ouzo, yes.
Metaxa.
Yeah.
Well, yep. I have photographic evidence that you've had.
Ouzo. Oh, here we go.
I know you've had ouzo because I have photographic evidence of that.
You know, when my dad and I were on our Greek trip, a number of years ago, a restaurant was recommended to us for lunch.
Where is this now?
Was on the island of Rhodes,
oh,
I think.
Very nice.
And the tour guide knew the guy that ran the restaurant.
Nice.
And she said, just go in there and tell him you know me. Well, we had probably the best meal on the whole trip. Yeah. Then his mother's homemade baklava for dessert and a coffee ouzo. It was ouzo with a coffee with ouzo in it, just the right infusion of it.
Yeah.
And it was a hot day, so
that would be delicious. Greek coffee is very strong and very sweet.
Yeah,
and the ouzo has a licorice flavor, an anise flavor.
That's right. That's so right.
I can imagine. I've never had those two things together.
And I haven't had it since. I was at Greek Islands and asked about it, and they were, you know, they weren't quite sure about it. So, you know.
Oh. I'll fix you up next Sunday.
Okay. Well, yeah, right. You're the one that walks in and says, maybe you know me.
No, I'll infuse it and I'll bring it.
Oh, you infuse it in? You'll bring it in?
Yeah, we can do this show Smash next week.
Okay.
That'll be a first.
You know me. I drink plenty of coffee, so.
That'll be a first and probably last.
The last one, most likely.
For both of us. So, yeah, the lambs I know are going. People have been sending me pictures of their lambs that are on the spit, which I love. There's just all kinds of food. And the pastries that you're talking about, baklava and galatuburiko, which is a custard dessert. There's a traditional bread which is served for Easter called tsuraigi that I know people are getting together today. But one of the other traditional dishes is this pastitsa. If you've been to any Greek restaurant, they have it. It's a macaroni dish, a pasta. People call it Greek lasagna because it's pasta, but it's not made with lasagna sheets. It's traditionally made with macaroni, so the sauces can get inside of the holes of the macaroni. My mom made it with penne pasta, penne number 43 to be exact. She liked that it was, penne is a shorter cut, so the sauces could really, really get in, and that's very true. So when my mom made pastitsa, which is also my grandmother's recipe, I learned how to make it also, and I made it on TV this past Wednesday. So if you want to see the video of that, you can go to WGN TV/Dean Cooks. That's where we keep all the videos and all the recipes, WGN TV/Dean Cooks. But it is basically three different things. It's the pasta, which you make according to directions, al dente, don't overcook it, because you're also going to bake it. A meat mixture, which is beef. Some people do beef and lamb. Some people do just lamb, depending on what you like. But it's the beef and onions and garlic and red wine and cognac and crushed tomatoes and tomato paste and mint is a very important part of this recipe. A little bit of allspice, a little bit of cinnamon is a very important part of this flavor profile. All the proportions are in the written recipe, which is on the website. And then the third part is this bechamel sauce. Traditionally, the bechamel goes on last. It sits as a layer on top of this. That's not how my mom or grandmother did it. They mixed the bechamel into the pasta, so it all baked together into a delicious, wonderful creaminess with a grated cheese. You can use Parmesan if you want to, or there's a Greek cheese called Mizithra that you put on top of it, which is a sharp cheese. You know, and cheese on top of a casserole melts beautifully and crisps up a little bit. And they would put a little sprinkling of seasoned breadcrumbs on there as well, so it had a nice crusty top. It is delicious. So if you want the recipe, WGNTV.com/Dean Cooks. You can see the video of me making it, and you can get the full recipe there as well. WGNTV.com/Dean Cooks. You want to get the recipes automatically sent to you. You just text the word cooks to 97999. It's 1237. It's Dean Richards Sunday morning on WGN. And a happy Cinco de Mayo to all celebrating today. I know the Cinco de Mayo celebration continues. It's been going on all weekend at Navy Pier and Little Village. Celebrations have been going on all weekend long. Restaurants are celebrating all weekend long, and that's what I wanted to get into today. Some of the great Mexican restaurants that we have here in the Chicago area. I was talking about one that I had gone to only for the very first time. I understand that they've been open for several years. And it is a Greek restaurant that I used to go to all the time that closed, I don't know, 5-7 years ago, maybe something like that. It used to be called the Mythos restaurant on Montrose. But now it's Xochimilco. Xochimilco, which is spelled X-O-C-H-I-M-I-L-C-O. Xochimilco. And I can't recommend it enough. The I had an amazing carne asada with shrimp. The sauces are clearly homemade. Sauces are so delicious. The guacamole that we had was obviously homemade. Some places, you know, they do it right at the table, so you know that it's homemade. But this was just such a top-quality restaurant. I loved it. And I know that you also have some of your favorite Mexican restaurants, because I've been getting your texts on this morning. And that's what I want to deal with here, both on our phone line and also on our text line, 312-981-7200 for your favorite Mexican restaurants. If somebody wanted to go and celebrate Cinco de Mayo today, where would they go and do that, in your opinion? I have my recommendation, Xochimilco on Montrose. It is just not even a block west of Damon on Montrose. But we'll get to the text line on that and phone lines in just a minute. 312-981-7200. Also, I wanted to get into favorite Mother's Day spots, favorite Mother's Day brunch spots, because next Sunday is Mother's Day. If you don't make a reservation right now, you may already be too late, because it's one of the busiest eating out days of the year. Mother's Day and Valentine's Day are the two biggest eating out days of the year. You got to make your reservations early. I know lots of you have Mother's Day traditions, places that you like to go to for Mother's Day dining. Tell us what your favorites are. We will get to that in a moment. Plus, this coming week on WGN TV Morning News, on my weekly cooking segment, I want to do some Mother's Day brunch ideas. You know, not just the usual old stuff. I want to do a few things that are a little bit different, not overly complicated. You know, something that is easily done on Mother's Day. But I'd love to get some ideas of, if you're a mom, what you would like. If you are somebody who is going to be treating your mom to a home-cooked meal for Mother's Day next week, what is a guaranteed home run? Is it a brunch idea? Is it a dinner idea? 312-981-7200 is the phone number for that. So we'll get to the phone lines here in just a second, but let me read a couple of texts first. There are several people on the line that agree with me about Xochimilco on Montrose. I'm glad that you've also enjoyed it. Andy Mazur mentioned, too, that he has gone there as well and absolutely loved it. So I'm glad other people are also enjoying this restaurant. The 773 area code has texted in, "Hi, Dean, Maria's in Rosemont is one of our favorites." I'm so glad that you texted that in, because Maria's has been one of my favorites for a very long time. It's almost tucked into an industrial, an office kind of complex. It's a little bit hard to find in Rosemont, but get your GPS out and, you know, get the official directions. It's called Maria's in Rosemont. It's a very traditional Tex-Mex restaurant, and I think one of the better ones in the Chicago area. So Maria's in Rosemont. Couldn't agree with you more on that. Several people also texting in. I had mentioned Rick Bayless's restaurants, Frontera Grill and Topolobampo. Topolobampo is, I don't know if it's technically a five-star restaurant, but it should be. If it's not, it's extremely upscale. The food is exquisite. It is Mexican fine dining, honestly. A little bit pricey, I will say that. But it is, you want to just really enjoy yourself and not think about the price with some exquisite Mexican dining. His Topolobampo restaurant is the place to go. Frontera Grill is a little more approachable, but it's still very much the Rick Bayless style of everything homemade. It's ingredients and entrees that you don't find, you know, at every, you know, restaurant. It's still an exceptional find for Mexican dining. So Frontera Grill, Topolobampo, Maria's in Rosemont. Definitely love all of those. Here is somebody who is recommending El Sombrero in Mount Prospect. El Sombrero in Mount Prospect. I've never been to this place, but the 847 here is recommending their Tacos El Carbon. We'll give that a try next time we're up in that area. Here's another from the 224 area code. I love La Casa de Isaac and Moisha in Highland Park. La Casa de Isaac and Moisha in Highland Park. It says here that it is a wonderful family-run Mexican-Jewish restaurant. All right. That's an interesting fusion, right? Good choice. I'll definitely remember the name, that's for sure. 224 area code is recommending Zentli, Zentli. It's on Dempster and Evanston, it says. Authentic Mexican cuisine and wonderful margaritas. All right. Well, you can't go wrong with that combination, that's for sure. 312-981-7200 is our telephone number. And we'll get to some more of your texts and calls when we come right back. Sunday morning on WGN. I meant to mention this earlier, but I was in Los Angeles this past week and saw the new Amy Winehouse biopic called Back in Black. It tells the story, the tragic story of singer Amy Winehouse's life. It stars a relatively unknown British actress named Marisa Abela. She looks and sounds just like Amy Winehouse. This really is going to be her breakout role, I think. But she looks and sounds like Amy Winehouse. And there are a few problems with the film, honestly. I'll tell you much more about it when it opens in a couple of weeks. But if you love the movie of Amy Winehouse, this is going to be a must-see because it brings back, and the actress herself is singing, performing all of Amy Winehouse's amazing hits that were part of her very short life and career before she drug overdosed. So I'll keep you posted on that. But if you're an Amy Winehouse fan, just put that on your radar for right now. We're talking on our Food Time show today about favorite Mexican restaurants for Cinco de Mayo today, and also Mother's Day choices. With Mother's Day coming up next week, are there places that you really love? I'm going to be doing, this coming week, I'm going to be doing some Mother's Day brunch picks to get you ready for, you know, the Mother's Day celebration. Things that are easy, things that are, you know, unique, obviously delicious. Delicious and easy are my two absolute requirements of the recipes that I make on television. I know for one thing that I'm going to be doing is a French toast roll-up. It's very much like you would make traditional French toast. Not this thick French toast, not the brioche or challah French toast, you know, which is thick and moist. This is actually white bread, good old-fashioned white bread, that you take your rolling pin and flatten it out even a little bit more, roll it, onto the bread itself. You're going to put some sugars and cinnamon and, you know, some spices and things like that, and then roll it like a cigar, dip it in your milk batter, which is also spiced with cinnamon and nutmeg, I think, is in it, and so forth. So you dip it, and then you put it in the pan. So they're like a little roll-up French toast, just, you know, for something a little bit different. I found a recipe for a orange and raspberry mimosa that sounds very delicious. Now, I've had, you know, the traditional mimosa is champagne or Prosecco with some orange juice in it. But what this does is takes that recipe and adds raspberry, pureed raspberries, which have been put into an ice cube tray, frozen. The frozen raspberry cubes go into the glass as you make the mimosa with the champagne and the orange juice. So the raspberry cubes melt in the champagne and orange juice, and that just sounds absolutely delicious to me and couldn't be easier and would be a special treat for Mom, right? Next Sunday? I think it would be. 312-981-7200, the telephone number for some suggestions on your part. Here's the 773 area code that is suggesting the White Eagle, the good old White Eagle in Niles for Mother's Day brunch. Boy, is that ever a staple, right? For Mother's Day and special dining events like that. White Eagle, it's got to be like 6800-something North Milwaukee Avenue, right, in Niles, something like that. And I looked up their Mother's Day brunch. Let me see what they have here. Bottomless mimosas. Hello. They have a breakfast station with omelets, French toast, and bacon, a carving station for honey-baked ham, prime rib, and leg of lamb. Yum. For seafood lovers, they have salmon with dill sauce, cod and shrimp cocktails. They have a pasta station and a Polish station where they're serving up classics like pierogies and mushroom barley soup and smoked Polish sausage. Yeah, they're pretty famous for their Polish entrees as well. Price on this, is next Sunday, Mother's Day brunch. They have seatings at 11 a.m. and 2 p.m., and the price is $57.75. That's not that much, really, for a spread like that. So, and White Eagle is, you know, sort of famous, famous for their, putting on spreads like that. So that sounds pretty good. That's a pretty good suggestion. Thank you for that. Here's another recommending Las Palmas in Harwood Heights. For Mexican dinners. Have never been, but have heard about it forever, and people have recommended it to me forever. There is another here from the 773 area code for Celuita. Celuita in Rolling Meadows. And this is, let's see here, tacos, a taco and tequila bar. That is 1655 West Algonquin Road. Their menu looks terrific. I looked it up during the break, so I wanted to see, you know, if they had anything special or if, you know, it was just sort of like an average kind of place. But no, they're they have an amazing tequila menu. And let me scroll down here. It's mostly I was mostly looking at the tequila menu. But let me find the food here. I'm not going to be able to find it quickly enough. But just based on the high-quality tequilas that they have and margaritas and so forth, it looks like it's a pretty solid suggestion. Celuita in Rolling Meadows. If you're interested in that, 312-981-7200, the 847 area code says that my husband is taking me out to A Thousand Tales, a Mediterranean Turkish buffet for Mother's Day. It says that, let me see here, since my June cruise will be stopping in Istanbul, we wanted to kind of get in the mood in it all. I've never heard of A Thousand Tales. I'll see if we can find an exact address and everything, but it's $50 a person. That's not bad, really. Honestly, for a Mother's Day brunch, if you think about you're probably getting a cocktail, you know, you're probably getting a few extra, you know, special things for a big spread on a buffet, on a holiday, especially where, you know, the restaurants are packed and the prices are also high. You know, it's... you know, it's something that doesn't sound bad. But anyway, it's called A Thousand Tales Mediterranean Turkish Buffet for Mother's Day. Something to think about there. Yeah, coming up this week on WGN TV Morning News, we've got some special A-listers actually talking about food. I interviewed Chris Pine and Danny DeVito the other day, and it was maybe a year or so ago. Chris Pine gave me the greatest recipe ever for a lemon pasta. I make this all the time now. I won't make pasta anymore if I haven't infused some lemon into it with lemon zest or lemon juice. It brightens up the pasta so much. I've got the recipe online, WGNTV.com/Dean Cooks, if you want to look for it there. But anyway, I brought it back to Chris Pine, thanking him for that recipe and telling him how much I used it. And he and I started talking about recipes. And then Danny DeVito chimes in. Look at these two non-Italians talking about making pasta. What do you guys know about making pasta? It's a really fun and funny interview. That's going to be this coming Monday with Chris Pine, Thursday with Danny DeVito, and this coming Friday, I'm going to be doing my cooking, not on Wednesday this week. It's going to be on Friday. So I hope you have a wonderful Greek Easter today. If you're celebrating Eastern Orthodox Easter, happy Easter to you. I hope you have a wonderful Cinco de Mayo. Maybe take in some of the suggestions that we've brought up to you. They continue to roll in. Las Mananitas at 3500 North Halstead has been a great place. I've been there many times. That's a fantastic place. Mi Mexico in Buffalo Grove on Milwaukee Avenue. Somebody says that Maria's restaurant that we were talking about is not in Rosemont, but it's really Chicago, but it's right on the edge of Rosemont out there. Still highly, highly recommended. Some great choices.